Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
Now, in the past year or so, there's been quite a bit of focus on statues. By that I mean statues being toppled, defaced or forcibly torn down. Slave trader Edward Colston was thrown into Bristol Harbour in June last year during a Black Lives Matter protest. Former British Prime Minister Winston Churchill was daubed with the word racist in London. A statue of Christopher Columbus, in fact, three statues of Christopher Columbus. One was toppled in Minnesota, one beheaded in Massachusetts and thrown into a lake in Virginia as well. And that's just a few examples of the very many. So is the act of toppling statues an erasure of our history or a justified attempt to right the wrongs of history? Well, I have in my hand a very entertaining and very informative book that looks at all of this. It's called Fallen Idols, 12 Statues that made history. It's an exploration of why statues are put up, why they're taken down, and what this teaches us about history and memory. It's written by historian, screenwriter and researcher Alex von Tunzelmann, and she joins me now. Alex, you're very welcome to the programme. Let's just jump straight in. In fact, let's go way back, because we are talking here about something that goes back to, I don't know, you know, it's nothing new, basically. It was even in the Bible, for God's sake, wasn't it?
Absolutely, Dave. It's in the commandments. You know, you're not supposed to make graven images. And actually, it mandates the Bible, the destruction of statues, that you're supposed to smash them up, the legend of the golden calf and so forth. So basically, it's a very, very old thing, not only to make statues, but also to destroy them. Those histories are nearly as old as each other. And certainly, you can see back in ancient Egypt, it was very common to smash up statues of previous pharaohs and so on. This goes back right to the beginning.
Okay, and the Victorians were great at taking down statues. Even Queen Victoria got involved, didn't she?
She did. So the Victorians were really obsessed with putting statues up, but they also did take them down and alter them for political reasons. So she particularly altered a statue, an obelisk actually, in Windsor Great Park. And she was, Victoria was sort of very pro-Scottish, but of course the previous generation, you know, the Jacobite Rebellion had been a kind of a very anti-Scottish moment for the monarchy. Victoria felt very, very differently, so she actually had the word Culloden chiselled off the obelisk that was a memorial to the Duke of Cumberland. So yes, she altered monuments herself as well as putting more up.
Well, having done your research and having looked into all of this, if I say statues are the most visible and controversial form of, could you fill in the next bit? Are we talking historical storytelling?
We are. And it's a crucial thing to understand, because I think around this debate, it's said a lot that, you know, pulling down statues does that erase history. And I think it's very important to understand that statues aren't history. Statues are historical storytelling, which is something a bit different. It's a story that people tell about history. It's not necessarily history itself.
Well, then, is history erased when statues are removed, or is history made?
Well, it can be either, really, in a sense. But certainly, history is quite often made when statues are removed. And some of the events in the book really show that. I mean, particularly in the United States, the War of Independence against Britain actually began with when George Washington read out the Declaration of Independence in New York. Various soldiers and sailors and civilians went and pulled down the statue of the British King George III in Bowling Green in New York at that time. So, you know, when we were having all these debates last year, and you know, at that time, President Trump and so on were saying that it was un-American to pull down a statue. Well, actually, it's the most American thing you can do. It's the foundational event of the United States. And I mean, similarly, we've seen, you know, a lot of really kind of significant moments of statues being pulled down. I mean, some of your listeners, I'm sure, will remember the time around the fall of communism, when there were incredibly significant moments and sort of cathartic moments with statues being pulled down in, you know, the former Soviet Union at that time. So we've often seen it to be a kind of important symbolic moment. But people's reaction to it depends very much on which statues are pulled down and why and when.
Yeah, and important symbolic men, usually. It's usually great men, and I use great in inverted commas, and virtuous individuals, etc. But what are we looking at here? Are they historical records, or are they political statements? And with either answer, or with any answer, have they had their day?
Well, I mean, I think statues are almost always political statements, really. Mm. I mean, they tend to be a kind of effigy of, yes, usually a great man. There are increasing numbers of statues of women, but not very many. And certainly historically, the overwhelming majority of them were of men, particularly, of course, in the West, white men. And so, you know, these statements are basically, we understand what it means. The phrase to put someone on a pedestal is not to create some sort of neutral account of their life. It's actually to celebrate them, and that's very, very clearly understood with the history of statues. So, of course, that means that, you know, it's actually propaganda, not necessarily art. Now, of course, there's a great tradition of sculpture, which is quite separate, but this sort of representative individual statuary is really a form of propaganda. So when people challenge that and take it down, well, of course, they may well do that if they disagree with the regime that has often put many of these things up.
Yeah, well, a couple of weeks ago at the beginning of September, I'll just quote from the newspaper here, a very long headline, Guy's Hospital accused of cultural vandalism as it announces it will remove statue of slave trading founder Thomas Guy to a less prominent place after sort of pressure from BLM protests, despite 75% of the public voting to keep listed monuments where it is. So, like, I mean, it's going to be accompanied, as it turns around the corner somewhere, by a plaque detailing his ties to the slave trade. So it stays up, but...
Yeah, it stays up, but with a bit of context. I mean, that's something that people have tried quite a lot with some statues, is to add plaques or, you know, add some kind of alteration or context. And I think in some situations, perhaps that works. But generally speaking, I think the plaques are not very successful. People tend not really to read them. It happened a few years ago where in the United States, in Virginia, somebody put up some statues of World War II leaders. So they had Churchill and Truman and Roosevelt, and they also had a bust of Stalin that they put up among those Allied leaders. And it did have a plaque on it saying, oh, you know, Stalin actually killed lots of people and we're not celebrating him. But actually, nonetheless, the plaque made no difference. Nobody read it. In fact, it caused enormous offence and people were very upset about it and did see it as a celebration. It did have to be removed and it's not been seen since. So what you can see from that is that actually people often don't really read plaques. People do understand the statue as a celebration. Sometimes I think moving it can help to a different location. Yeah. It doesn't seem celebratory.
And but, there is a big thing at the moment about possibly moving many to museums and places like that, which probably aren't big enough to hold them. But I'll get to that in a minute. I just want to quote you this Robert Musil guy who says, there's nothing in this world as invisible as a monument. I mean, in many ways, like, we pass statues a lot, all the time. It's like some bloke sitting with a hat on a horse or whatever. If you asked 100 people as they passed by, who is that guy or what's it celebrating, would I be right in thinking that in general 95% wouldn't have a clue?
I mean, at least.
Yeah, at least, exactly.
Time,
yeah.
I would say. I mean, I think they become very invisible, and that's one reason that I think even, you know, people who are anxious about preserving statues as part of heritage, and for people that, you know, are anxious about keeping them up and spreading messages that they don't like, perhaps the solution that everybody could get behind is this idea that has been done in a lot of, for instance, former Soviet Union places and so on, of moving the statues to a sculpture park. I mean, a museum's tricky because, as you say, museums do not have space for a load of statues. But moving it to an outdoor park can be fantastic because you can put lots there and then people actually go and look at them, as opposed to if they're sitting on some traffic island, as you say, the vast majority of us will walk past and totally ignore the thing. So in a way, it gets more looked at if you move it to a sculpture park or somewhere where it's actually in a context.
Exactly. By the way, we are talking to Alex von Tunzelmann, which is Fallen Idols is the name of the book, 12 Statues That Made History. And I said earlier on, it's very entertaining, very informative, and it's very funny in places. Just let me just quote a few things. And in fact, one of these quotes, I'll give it so you don't have to say it, which is the first one is the Dominican Republic, Rafael Trujillo. He's got a huge white monument to his male member, and he was killed by the CIA in 61. There's also the city of Hamilton in New Zealand. They removed a statue of its namesake, Captain John Hamilton. A Maori elder pointed out that he was a murderer's arsehole. And then finally, there's also the Little Mermaid in Copenhagen. Racist fish is put on it. What do we take from all of this, Alex?
Well, I think the graffiti on the Little Mermaid calling it a racist
fish was a prank.
Probably a joke.
Yeah.
I think someone was having a bit of a laugh in regards to all the different alterations that were going on. I don't think anyone particularly objects to the Little Mermaid statue. But, you know, I mean, I think there was this kind of extraordinary wave last year of the sort of, you know, pulling down or altering or defacing statues in various ways. And that was something fascinating because although that has happened quite a few times in history, you know, we've seen events like the French Revolution or the English Reformation where lots of statues have gone at once, or the fall of communism, it's never really happened globally like that before. That's something that was quite different about last year, is that it was happening everywhere at once, not just in one place. So it did, you know, all go, people were very worried about it spinning out of control and so on. And we can see it's still going on now. There are still statues being pulled down or taken away or altered quite regularly, even in the news now.
Well, when you just, like, the amount, for instance, like, you know, they can either be, you know, very, the people involved, admirable virtues or sinister propaganda, whatever. There's some great art there, some very cheap and ugly as well. But are there seriously nearly 12,000 statues, or at least monuments, to Kim Jong-un in North Korea?
That's right. I think probably, I mean, it's very hard to tell exactly how many statues there are in North Korea because, you know, information is tricky. So people have tried to reconstruct it off kind of Google Earth and off satellite maps and so on. It appears that there are thousands and thousands of outdoor monuments to Kim Jong-un and to various kind of Kim dynasty figures. I mean, and, you know, I think probably from what I can work out that it's the highest density of statues of a leader anywhere in the world right now. Now, again, I think when that, you know, one day that regime does fall in North Korea, probably a lot of those will be taken down and probably a lot of people won't be particularly sad about that happening. You know, because they really are absolutely everywhere.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, is this a thing of the past? I mean, are there many politicians of the now? I mean, I know that Trump joked, but then he wasn't joking at all about getting his head up there on Mount Rushmore. But I'm just thinking, like, you know, it doesn't seem to be, like, what it is, it seems to be very good for, you know, loads now want to engage in a debate and educate themselves about history. It's not really a happening thing now, is it? Unless you're, you know, Ronaldo or Phil Lynott here in Dublin from Thin Lizzy or Billy Bremner in Leeds or Diana.
Yeah, well, there has been this sort of trend towards more statues of, you know, lesser sort of politicians or, you know, or so on. And much, you know, there are more, I think, going up of pop stars and so on and of, you know, sort of cultural figures. And I think those, in a sense, work much better. They tend to be more popular with people because I think they're just less contentious. You know, it's less sort of propaganda and more than actually just something that people are quite fond of.
So, but I mean,
they do vary, of course.
Yeah, but I mean, like in the last 20 months, if we're talking woke culture, cancel culture or whatever, do you think it is that thing I just mentioned there, that it is good for people wanting to engage in debate and educate themselves about history?
Oh, yeah, I do. I mean, I think this is a really positive thing that can come out of the last year is that actually this has started some discussions. And, you know, you don't always have to pull down a statue to have a discussion about history, but it has made people ask questions. So, you know, some of those dramatic ones like Edward Colston being pulled down in Bristol. Well, I think a lot more people now are talking about, OK, so who was he? Let's find out that history. And of course, you know, that's, I think, a very positive thing for everybody. Again, whichever side you're on with all of this, there's no harm in finding out more about the past and where that came from. So, you know, I think that can be a very positive outcome.
Yeah, I mean, like, there was literally fierce debate, you know, iconic effigies when they fell. The backlash was very swift, very intense. There's been a lot in the last 18 months.
Yes, and I mean, this is, you know, something that kind of, I tried to write the book really to address is this idea of this culture war that, you know, people are kind of on one side or the other, that, you know, younger progressives want to take statues down all the time and older conservatives want to keep them up. And actually, one of the things I was really keen to show is that those positions are not consistent at all in history. So, I mean, even if you go back to just, you know, not a million miles away, 2015 in the Ukraine, when lots of all the statues of Lenin basically in Ukraine were taken down at that point, it was called the Lenin Fall, this very dramatic event. And I mean, lots of Western conservatives were very supportive of that, whereas actually some younger progressives were not so sure that that was a brilliant idea. So actually these positions are reversed all the time, depending on which statues are going.
And what's your position? I mean, like when I say it's all very reasonably put out, very entertainingly put out, very well paced, very funny, very everything else too, educational. Do you want us to see the layers? Do you want us to check out the nuance and the different points of view?
I really do. I want people to engage with it more meaningfully. So I don't think it's a question of just saying, right, one answer fits all, take them all down or keep them all up. I think actually I want people to engage with these things, you know, as individual objects. And I think local communities really should have the right to decide whether something stays or goes. There's absolutely no reason you have to keep it or get rid of it if, you know, depending on how the community feels. And I think different communities will come up with different answers to that question, and that's perfectly all right. So really, it's kind of, rather than having a sort of really simplistic take, I want people to understand that actually these things can be a bit complicated, but also very interesting, I hope.
Because, yeah, like, I mean, obviously Donald Trump and Boris Johnson are going to go on a certain side that we know about, most definitely. Like, Trump went on about damaging federal property, and Boris Johnson's statues teach us about the past with all its faults. To tear them down would be to lie about our history. And you, obviously they're the, you know, that's the angle they're going to take. You can see where they're coming from, can't you?
I mean, you can see where they're coming from, but it doesn't stand up to even any scrutiny because, you know, for him to say taking a statue down lies about our history, well, I'm quite sure he won't be saying that if those Kim statues do come down in North Korea.
Obviously,
I mean, after World War II, we know, for instance, that Germany banned all Nazi statues, took every single Nazi statue down. Well, that hasn't led to any lies about the history at all. What's happened is that actually Germany has had a comprehensive program of lifelong education. And in fact, the Second World War and the Holocaust are very meaningfully and widely remembered in Germany. So we can see that that's simply not true. And that actually really, you know, taking the statue down makes no difference to the history. The question is how we remember the history and how we discuss it.
Also, by the way, like in the UK here as well, of course, statues might be part of the whole landscape, but protests against statues are also part of our heritage. So what should we do about statues that are controversial? I mean, this is very unfair. I mean, I'm going to ask you, do you have a solution? Have you any ideas?
Well, I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer. I do think there are some quite fun compromises. I mean, as I say, I'm quite in favour of these statue parks, kind of places that you can put lots of unwanted statuary in and you can contextualise it and visit it. It can be a great family day out. So there's one in Delhi, one in Moscow, one in Budapest that people might have seen. I mean, and they're quite amazing, actually, and fascinating, I think. But I also think that there have been some very clever alterations of statues that are possible.
Well, yeah, the biggest alteration surely is the Bow Street Church, the East End tradition since 1882, where red paint was put in the hands of William Gladstone and then scrubbed off and then back the next day again. And it's really kind of a statement for women who fought for better conditions.
It is. That statue was put up by the owner of the Bryanton May Match Factory. And the match girls really objected to it. They didn't particularly object to Gladstone, to be honest. The protest was not really about him. It was about them being overcharged in their wages to put up this fancy statue really to glorify yet another Victorian white male patriarch. So, you know, it turned out, in fact, that their pay hadn't been docked for this, but they were so angry about it that initially what happened is that the match girls actually staged a protest around the statue and cut their hands and bled onto the statue, apparently. And so this is now remembered in the East End. So that statue always has its hands painted red. Now and then, you know, the council scrub it off and then it's always red again, basically, by the next morning. So, you know, that's now been maintained for well over 100 years. And I think that's part of the tradition, too. You know, you can also say that actually that statue is much more interesting because it was a pretty ordinary statue of Gladstone. Yeah. It's fine. But
absolutely,
it's much more interesting because of that history. And I mean, you can see that in a lot of places that these alterations are done, and they can be fascinating as well and part of the community.
Indeed. Well, listen, Alex, it's been a real pleasure. Let me just get the full thing. First of all, you're going to be appearing at the Dublin Festival of History. The Dublin Festival of History is opening this coming Monday, the 20th of September. We'll continue for 3 weeks with a mix of in-person and online events. The Fallen Idols event, which is what we're talking about here, is happening on Friday, the 1st of October at 7 o'clock till 8 o'clock. And advance registration is required. See dublinfestivalofhistory.ie for the full details on how to register and for the festival programme itself. So Fallen Idols, 12 Statues That Made History is the book. Alex von Tunzelman. Alex, thanks so much for talking to us on the programme today, and enjoy yourself in Dublin next weekend.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.